How do you define success in your life? I'm guessing the answer to that question probably turns, at least in part, on where you find yourself in life. When you are 4 years old, for example, success is not piddling in your pants. When you're 12 years old, success is having friends. When you're 16 years old, success is having a driver's license. When you're 35 years old, success is having money. Some of you may be behind the curve there. When you're 50 years old, success is having money. When you are 70 years old, success is still having your driver's license. When you're 80 years old, success is still having friends. You see where this is going, right? And when you're 85 years old, success is not piddling in your pants. the circle of life. It's such a mystery that raises all kinds of questions that we feel compelled to answer. Questions like, why am I here? Why is all of this happening to me? Why does life have to be so hard? And where is God in all of this? For guidance today, we're going to look to the story of Jacob as told in the book of Genesis, and we're going to draw from that story two principles that are absolutely critical to succeeding in life, two principles of faith that are essential if you and I are going to survive and thrive down here on planet Earth. Let's start with a prayer. God, send us out of here today with more wisdom and greater clarity than when we entered. May your holy word come alive and leap into our hearts and position us for true success. We ask this in the name of Jesus. Amen. At age 34, Elizabeth Gilbert had everything going for her. She was successful in her career, a prosperous travel writer, making lots of money. She had a fancy apartment in Manhattan and a big house in the Hudson Valley. She had a devoted husband, and the two of them were looking forward to raising a child together. I guess you could say that at an early age, 34, 35, 36, Elizabeth Gilbert had arrived. Life was good. But a mere 4 years after that, when she still had all of this, lo and behold, one night she found herself locking herself in her bathroom and crumpling to the floor. Though she was not a religious person, she got on her knees and she tried to pray. God, she said, I don't want to be married. I don't want to have my job. I don't want this big house. I don't want a child. On the one hand, she had everything. And yet she had nothing. She felt so lost. When in your life have you felt most lost? It can happen even to people of deep faith. Andrew Brunson was a 20-year missionary to Turkey when there was a coup in Turkey and the new government that came to power was suspicious of American missionaries, thought they were spies. Brunson was arrested. He spent an entire year in a brutal Turkish prison before charges were finally brought against him, charges of spying. He was facing the prospect of spending decades of his life in a Turkish prison. Thankfully, after a couple years, he was released and was able to come back to the United States. And in a chapel service at Wheaton College, he shared his testimony with the students there. And he didn't pull any punches. He put it very candidly. He said, after just a few days in prison, I completely lost the sense of God's presence in my life. God was silent and remained silent for 2 whole years. I was broken. I lay there alone in my solitary cell. I had great fear, terrible grief. I was weeping all the time. And the thought kept going through my mind, where are you, God? And why are you so far away? In your own life, when have you felt most lost? Jacob knew a thing or two about that. Today we picked up the story of Jacob when he was just a teenager. You have to understand that he was the son and grandson of parents and grandparents who had immigrated to Canaan, the so-called land of promise, from a far away territory. Canaan was the only home that Jacob had ever known. But when he was a teenager, and according to the customs of the time, age 15, maybe age 16, when he was of marriageable age under ancient customs, his father told him, I don't want you to take a wife from among the Canaanites. I'm going to send you on a long journey all the way back to our ancestral village so that you can find a wife there. And so Jacob, as a teenager, sets out on foot or by donkey on a 457-mile journey from where they lived to Haran, the ancestral village of his family. He sets out as a teenager all alone at a time in the world when travel was dangerous and precarious. Can you imagine, if you're a teenager, what you are feeling like as you set out on that journey, as you leave behind everything that is familiar and comfortable to journey into the great unknown, to go to a place you've never been before, to meet people you've never met before, to find a wife that you have never known before? Barely a quarter of the way into this journey, roughly 100 miles into this journey, we're told in our text today, Genesis 28:11, Jacob came to a certain place and stayed there for the night. The sun had set. Taking one of the stones of the place, he put it under his head and lay down in that place. That stone is a symbol for where Jacob was in his life, in a hard place. And you've got the picture, right? It's dark. He's all alone. He's somewhere along this roadway, sleeping out in the open under the stars, having forsaken all that was familiar and comfortable, and journeying into the dangerous, great unknown. Jacob must have felt so alone and so lost. But then, something incredible happens. He drifts off to sleep and he has a dream so vivid and real, it would change his life forever. In his dream, there is this great ladder that extends from heaven all the way to where he is sleeping on the ground there. Angels are descending and ascending on the ladder. And then, verse 13, the Lord God stood beside him. God appears to Jacob and says to him, I am the Lord, the God of your grandfather Abraham and your father Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and to your offspring. And your offspring shall be so numerous, they'll be like the dust of the earth. And all the families of the earth shall be blessed in you and in your offspring. Then comes the part of the promise that must have meant the most to Jacob, given where he was at this point in life. God goes on to say to him, verse 15, know that I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back home to this land. when Jacob wakes up in the morning, he exclaims something that none of us should ever forget. The words that Jacob speaks when he wakes up in the morning at this nondescript place in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of all his lostness, it is the first of two great truths that we're going to focus on today. Never forget these words. Jacob awakened from his dream and said, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it." And he said, "How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. And this is the very gate of heaven." In other words, Jacob realized that this nondescript, lonely, lost place was where heaven was intersecting his life and working in his life to boost him forth on his journey. Jacob realized that when he felt most lost, when he felt most alone, to his great surprise, God was in that place. Let those words sink in to your soul. Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. Because that brings us to the first of these two great truths that we can learn from Jacob. No matter where you roam, wherever you go, and whatever happens to you, you are never lost. God will find you there. God is with you. And where you are is leading somewhere. A cop positioned his cruiser around a bend in the road, camouflaged behind a bush, and waited for somebody to come speeding around the corner. After a little while, sure enough, a teenager comes roaring around the corner at breakneck speed. The cop chases him down, pulls him over, walks up to the vehicle, and with a sly grin on his face, the cop says to the teen, "I've been waiting for you all day." Not skipping a beat, the smart aleck teen said to the cop, "Oh yeah? Well, I got here as fast as I could." None of us knows what's around the next bend in our life. But God does. God is already there, waiting for you. At that place you don't even know right now you will someday be. You are never lost. Maybe you're at a place in your life where you feel so stuck. Shannon Michaels sent me a picture the other day, a funny picture that looks like this. I know it's kind of faded, but can you make out what's happening here? Can you see the cat that is standing in the upper part of that window? Apparently, this cat was in the habit of doing this, and apparently people, as they passed by this house, would repeatedly knock on the door to warn the owners that their cat was stuck in the window. So the owners finally put, you see this handwritten sign on the window? The handwritten sign says, "This cat is not stuck. Thank you." You may feel stuck in your life where you are, but I've got news for you. God is right there with you, and where you are is leading somewhere. I don't mean to imply by that wherever we are, wherever we go, God meant for us to be in that place, because sometimes we go to places where we should not go. Like this German Shepherd, who seems to have jumped in the aquarium. Sometimes, by the way, the caption on that says, "German Shepherd available to a good home." Sometimes we go where we should not be. But even then, you are not lost. God will find you there and be with you, and where you are is leading somewhere. Jacob learned that when he was just a teenager. And so did I. When I was 19 years old, a sophomore in college at Bob Jones University, an independent fundamentalist Baptist college in South Carolina. For me, at the time, that was a familiar and comfortable place to be because it reflected the culture of the churches that I was raised in. So I was happy to be there. It was like being in Shangri-La. It was like being in paradise. All of these like-minded people gathered around me. I loved it there. I was a fervent believer. Jesus was everything to me, and I was there to prepare for a life of ministry so that I could do great things for God. That was the plan. But you know what they say, if you want to make God laugh, tell God your plans. My sophomore year in college is when it began to dawn on me that there was trouble in paradise. It was then that I began to fully realize that I was different in a way that was dangerous and disabling in that environment. You see, my sophomore year in college, I fell in love with my roommate, Mark, secretly. When Christmas break came that year, I flew to my parents' home in Colorado Springs. Mark flew to his parents' home, which happened to be in Denver, 60 miles north of Colorado Springs. So while on break, I borrowed the family car one day and drove up to Denver to visit with my good friend. I was so excited about this visit. It would be a chance for us to spend quality time together away from the hecticness of school and a chance to meet his family. I was so excited about this. But when I got there, all we did was sit in the living room for 3 hours with his family and watch stupid TV shows. Nobody talking, no mingling, no. So that when I left, it was clear to me, if I hadn't figured this out before, that he was not as into me as I was into him. And I felt so embarrassed that I had invested so much of my heart in something that could never be. And as I was driving home to Colorado Springs down Interstate 25, those 60 miles back home that night, I remember it hit me for the first time in my life like a ton of bricks that this is what my life was going to be like, that I was going to be alone for the rest of my life, that I would never be able to have a special someone in my life, and that my plans to be a minister were never going to come to pass. Because let's face it, there isn't much market for a single gay preacher in independent, fundamentalist Baptist churches. And so here I was at age 19 on a dark, cold winter's night, headed back to Colorado Springs, and I felt so alone. I felt so lost. God, why is this happening to me? Where are you in this, God? But then, and I remember this like it was yesterday, then it occurred to me that if someone were to say, you can trade life with somebody else, or you can take this disabling, problematic part of yourself and give it to somebody else, and you can be normal. It occurred to me in that moment, I would have to say, no, thank you. Because God had made me as I was. And I loved being me. And I realized intuitively that if a significant part of myself was suddenly removed from me, I wouldn't be me anymore. And as that began to settle into my mind, that despite all of the hardship and challenges that faced me, that I was glad God had made me the way I was, I began to give thanks to God and to sing to God and to pour out my heart in prayer to God. And I tell you, in that vehicle headed home that night, I felt the presence of God like never before. It's like that old hymn that some of us used to sing. And he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own. And the joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever known. If God was with me, that was enough. Surely the Lord is in this place, and I didn't even know it. How awesome is this place? This must be the gate of heaven. This is that portal through which heaven is working in my life, and it's taking me somewhere. Jacob learned that lesson as a teenager. I learned that lesson as a teenager. And what was true for us is equally true in your life. Wherever you may roam, whatever may happen, no matter how confusing or confounding or challenging is the place that you find yourself, you are never lost. God will find you there. God is with you, and it's leading somewhere. The place where I found myself at age 19, it was what was going to take me to where I needed to be eventually, to this place, a good place, a blessed place. In great literature, there's a concept known as the hero's journey. Joseph Campbell once said, every great journey begins when someone leaves home. By that, he wasn't referring necessarily literally to our home, but to that which is familiar to us and therefore comfortable for us. Every great journey begins when someone leaves that which is familiar and comfortable to them. There's a famous ancient story about Hercules, who left home and was traveling through the wilderness when he comes to a fork in the road, and he's got to decide which way he's going to go. A beautiful, incredible goddess appears standing next to the left fork in the road, and she beckons Hercules to take that road. She promises him that it will be a road of ease and comfort, that he will find complete freedom down this road, and that there will be no want or lack on this road. Meanwhile, another incredible goddess appears standing beside the right fork in the road. She too beckons Hercules, but she, unlike the first, warns Hercules that this road will be full of struggle, sacrifice, and hard work. But she promises him, if you take this road, it will bring out the champion in you, and you will live fully into the heroic destiny for which you have been born. Hercules chose the right fork, and that made all the difference. Don't be afraid of your hero's journey. Embrace it. Life is going to take us some scary places, but God is there with us, and it's all leading somewhere. Okay, Jeff, you may say, if I'm on a journey, when will I arrive at my destination? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Jeff, when will I finally arrive in my life? Mark it down, April 3rd. 2022 at Life Journey Church, drum roll please. I'm about to give you the answer to that great question in your life, when will I finally arrive? The answer is, on this side of eternity, never. Never. You've probably heard psychologists refer to what they call the arrival fallacy. It's a term that was coined by a well-known Harvard psychologist, Tal Ben-Shahar. He defines the arrival fallacy as the illusion that once we make it, once we attain a certain goal or reach a certain destination, we will reach lasting happiness. When I get my driver's license, then I'll be happy. When I find my perfect mate, then I'll be happy. When I find my perfect job, that career path that is calling to me, then I will finally be happy. When I have money, then I'll finally be happy. When I recover from this physical illness, then I will be happy. When I retire, then I'll be happy. And on it goes, this powerful subconscious assumption that most all of us carry around with us, but never explicitly articulate, that says, someday all of the pieces of my life are going to come together, and then my life will be wonderful ever after. Last Sunday at the entrance to our children's wing, Becky and Pastor Tandy posted what they called a question board, where our kids, using post-it notes, can venture answers to some of life's big questions or interesting questions. The question of the week last week was, what is the best thing about being an adult? Some of our kids ventured an answer to that question. Parents, don't worry, the answers are anonymous, so you're not going to be embarrassed in front of everyone. Some of the kids ventured an answer to the question of what is the best thing about being an adult. One of our kids said, you get to have your money. A second kid said, you get dessert. A third said, not having to go to school. A fifth said, you get money, and the fifth said, and you get more money. Now, clearly, a theme is emerging here, right? Our kids are confident that when you become an adult, you will have money. Boy, are they going to be disappointed when they become adults and discover you never have enough money. Not just that, but they're also going to discover you often don't get dessert because your doctor's going to have you on a low-sugar diet. And you're probably going to have to go back to school to stay competitive in the job market. Our poor kids are going to be so disappointed when they arrive at adulthood. There is this mythical notion embedded deep in each one of us that someday all the pieces of our life are going to come together and life is going to be wonderful ever after. And when we buy into that notion, it sets us up for bitter disappointment in life. One bitter disappointment after another bitter disappointment after another disappointment in our life. Just ask Jacob, because you see, Jacob made it successfully to his ancestral village. And there, he successfully found a wife. In fact, he found two wives, which was his first mistake. Any of us who are married can tell you that one spouse is plenty, right? But Jacob makes it all the way to Haran. He finds two wives there. While there, he grows fabulously wealthy. And then eventually, as promised, God does bring him safely back to Canaan, to the land of promise. So imagine what that must have felt like for Jacob as he finally, after years, returns to the land of promise, that which is familiar and comfortable. He's back now with his wives, with his children, with his wealth. He must have thought to himself, yeah, life is good. I have finally arrived and I'm going to be happy ever after. Not so fast, Jacob. Because it turns out his wives fought tooth and nail, and his children fought tooth and nail. It was not a happy family. And in his old age, to top it all off, he and his family had to flee the land of promise and go all the way to Egypt to escape death from famine. And as an old man in Egypt, Jacob died, a stranger in a strange land. That brings us to the other great truth that we need to embrace in our lives. If we're going to be ready to survive and thrive down here on planet Earth, and that second message is, you will never arrive. After every battle, there's going to be another battle, and then another, and then another. We see this pattern repeat itself in the Bible all the time through the great heroes of the Bible. David is another prime example. As a shepherd boy, as a teenager, he dared to fight the giant Goliath. He prevailed in that battle, and all of a sudden, this teenager is his nation's greatest military hero. When you're 16, 17 years old, and you're the nation's military hero. It doesn't get better than that. He probably thought, I have arrived. But before long, King Saul became so jealous of this military hero, David, that he hatched a plot to secretly have him assassinated so that David had to flee. Had to flee Jerusalem and hide in caves, and he was on the lam, he was on the run for months, if not years, of his life. Ultimately, King Saul and Saul's son were both killed in the same battle, and the Israelites selected David to be their next king. Talk about arriving. When you're king or queen, you, by definition, have arrived. Wealth, power, everybody's there to serve you. You get to decide. David must have thought, ah, this is what I've been waiting for. Now I have finally arrived. Life's going to be wonderful, happy ever after. But not long after that, one of David's own sons, Absalom, launched an armed rebellion against his father to remove him from the throne and to take his place. And David had to flee Jerusalem and hide in the caves of the wilderness once again. The pattern is abundantly clear in the life of every Bible hero. After every battle, there's another battle. So don't set yourself up for bitter disappointment. Accept the fact. But Jeff, you may say, why does it have to be that way? The Bible tells us. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, the Apostle Paul lists a litany of all of the hardships that he had faced in his life. And then he goes on to say, 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 16, but we do not lose heart, for this slight momentary affliction, all of his troubles, is preparing us for an eternal weight of glory beyond all measure. Now, when we hear that verse, our mind immediately leaps to imagining what it will be like when we realize that eternal weight of glory that is beyond all measure. But don't miss the critical three words that come right before that, which tells us why there are so many battles in our lives. Why does it have to be that way? Because God is preparing us. That's why life is full of so many battles, because all of those battles are preparing our eternal souls. All of those battles are meant to help us grow stronger and more beautiful so that our eternal souls are fit for eternity. The strength and the beauty of your soul is the eternal weight of glory beyond measure that you will carry with you into the next life. So keep going. Keep growing. Don't stop. Don't give up. Embrace the adventure. After every battle, there's going to be another battle. Don't let that surprise you. Embrace the adventure, like Hercules, like Jacob, like all of the great Bible heroes, knowing that it's all leading somewhere. God is with you, and it's all going to lead somewhere. Every battle is a chance for another victory and for you to become stronger and more beautiful. Just ask Steve Jobs. You probably know the story of Steve Jobs, right? How as a young adult he founded Apple. And it quickly became what many historians regard as the most impactful company of all of history, on the cutting edge of technology, changing culture, fabulously successful. Can you imagine being Steve Jobs as a young adult? Talk about having it all. Talk about arriving fame, fortune, power, you name it. He could do anything that he wanted to do. But then, 10 years into his tenure at Apple, the unthinkable happened. The board of directors of Apple unceremoniously dumped Steve Jobs. They fired him from the very company that he had founded. He felt so lost. This wasn't the plan. But then, years later, looking back, at his famous 2005 commencement speech at Stanford University, This is what Steve Jobs said. Quote, I didn't see it then, but it turned out that getting fired from Apple was the best thing that had ever happened to me. The heaviness of being successful was replaced by the lightness of being a beginner again, less sure about everything. It freed me to enter one of the most creative periods of my life. During the next 5 years, I started a company named Next, another company named Pixar, and fell in love with an amazing woman who would become my wife. Pixar went on to create the world's first computer animated feature film, Toy Story, and is now the most successful animation studio in the world. And, he adds, in a remarkable turn of events, Apple bought my company Next. I returned to Apple, and the technology we developed at Next is at the heart of Apple's current renaissance. And Lorene and I now have a wonderful family together. I'm pretty sure, he said, none of this would have happened if I hadn't been fired from Apple. It was awful tasting medicine, but I guess the patient needed it. Surely, the Lord is in this place. And I didn't know it. How awesome is this place? It must be the gate of heaven, heaven working in my life to make me stronger and more beautiful if I will open myself to it. Michael J. Fox has a very similar testimony. You probably know his story too. How as a young adult he became the star of a hit show, Family Ties, and then went on to be the featured actor in the Back to the Future trilogy. As a young adult, Michael J. Fox had everything you could want. He had arrived until he was diagnosed with early onset Parkinson's. In an interview in 2013, this is what Michael J. Fox said about the path he had walked. Coping with the relentless assault of Parkinson's and the accumulating physical damage has not been easy. Nobody would ever choose to have this visited on them. And yet, the time since my diagnosis has proven to be the best 10 years of my life, not in spite of my illness, but because of it. If you were to rush into this room right now and announce that you had struck a deal in which the 10 years since my diagnosis could be magically taken away and traded in for 10 more years as the person I was before, I would, without a moment's hesitation, tell you to take a hike. I would never want to go back to that life. A sheltered, narrow existence, fueled by fear and made livable only by insulation, isolation, and self-indulgence. Surely the Lord is in this place. And I didn't know it. Sisters and brothers, this side of eternity, you will never arrive. After every battle, there will be another battle and another. But take heart, because all of those battles are means by which we are gaining in our eternal souls an eternal weight of glory that is beyond all measure. So take heart. Stop seeking an imaginary life that will never exist, and instead embrace the adventure of what is. Encounter God in the place where you are. Live large in the place where you are, and let all your battles have their intended effect. Until one day you'll look back and you'll say, wow, God was in that place, and I didn't know it. May it be so. Carry those words with you for the rest of your life. And when you feel lost, you stop and you say, the Lord is in this place.